Okay, I'd like to welcome everyone to our World Peace Diet Circle call. This is the third Thursday of July 17th, and this is Dr. Will Tuttle joining you. Thank you all for being part of the call and for your interest in deepening not only our, I think, your own understanding and contributing to our understanding of the deep structure of our society and how we can transform our world in a positive way, but also for your interest in actually helping to do that in this lifetime. So I really appreciate all of you being on the call. It's very heart-touching to be able to do this work, isn't it? I mean, I know I've talked to a number of you who said this is the most important kind of work that they can do in their life to help make a better world. And I know that I feel the same way. There's always a number of things, of course, pulling for our attention that seems to need to be fixed or improved or whatever it is. And as Thoreau said, for every one who is hacking at the, there are 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil for every one who is striking at the root. And I think this is striking at the root, and so that's sort of talking about it in a negative way, but I think it's also planting seeds of joy and freedom and compassion and abundance for everyone by understanding what veganism actually is, the ancient spiritual teaching. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. I thought I'd try something a little different today in the very beginning. Usually we have just a moment where we spend, spend a minute in sort of a meditative mode. And I'd like to do that as usual now, and then we can jump in. So normally I just talk. This time I've walked over into the living room here, where we have my good friend Yuma. My good friend Yuma. This is my good friend Yuma is now speaking. I don't know if he's coming through on this tiny little microphone I have, but anyway, I thought I'd just do a little bit of accompaniment here to this. So let's just take a moment as we begin our time together and just feel our connection with the earth and with heaven and the infinite spirit, source of all life. And let's just take a moment and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be on this call. And know that we are connected not only with each other, but with countless other human beings who are alive right now on this earth and who are committed also to global transformation, to creating the context where we can question the official stories of our culture and move toward a world of peace and freedom and justice. We give thanks that all the ripples that radiate from our being together here on this call are ripples that bring healing and peace and harmony to our world. And we know that this is a call that is dedicated to helping us to realize and awaken to the sacred in all life, to realize the truth that we are and the truth that is beyond the official stories of our society, the materialistic delusion that is injected into all of us through our daily meals. Such a great honor to be part of this movement and to be able to speak freely and from our hearts about what matters the most. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. May all beings be at peace. And may we all continue to create a more enlightened society for the benefit of all living beings of the past, present, and future. So thank you all for joining. I'm not sure how that came through, but it was fun to do anyway. And it's nice after 17 years living in our house on wheels with that digital piano, like we could finally bring Yuma out of storage. He sat in a box for 17 years. Can you imagine the patience of that being? Well, he's very patient, and he didn't even lose his tune. So I don't know if I would still be in tune after being hunched up in a box for 17 years, but he managed. It must be that Japanese attention to detail, I guess. So, great. This is a wonderful opportunity that we have to dive in here to apply the principles that are in the World Peace Diet and really are not original to the World Peace Diet by any means. I think really the World Peace Diet in many ways is a kind of a bringing together of ancient wisdom teachings from many cultures and combining them in a sense with modern science and with the cultural predicament that we find ourselves in being born on this planet right now, and offering this not only as a theoretical way of transforming ourselves and our society, but as a very practical way also. I love that about the World Peace Diet and about veganism in general, is that we're not, as you've probably heard me say this, we're not simply offering a critique of the ongoing system and how wasteful and destructive and devastating it is to our health and the environment and the animals and to our spiritual sensitivity and so forth. But we actually are offering and living, hopefully, a wonderful alternative and in some way planting seeds in other people to do the same thing so that we can actually, as the old saying goes, turn the ship around before we sink it, which seems to be the big question right now. Of course, everybody's wondering, I think, on some level, perhaps, if we have time to do that. And I don't think anyone knows the answer to that at all, at least no one that I am aware of. So I want to say at the very beginning that you're welcome on this call to ask questions or to pose thoughts or concerns that you have, questions, as I said, or to share victories or insights or news that you have that has to do with your advocacy for veganism. Pretty much everybody on this call is a World Peace Diet facilitator, gone through the training, and or are going through the training, and many of you are just wonderful models of activism in your communities. So it's an honor to have you with us. And I do want to say, you know, just press *6 on your phone, and when that happens, I will see it here on the computer screen that I have in front of me, and I'll be able to unmute your phone, and you can speak. So that's a very important part of this. It's not just a monologue. I'm happy to respond, and other people, of course, can also respond to any thoughts or feelings or questions that may be coming up. So last month we had just a wonderful time. I remember it was just a wonderful call. I had just watched the new documentary Kip Anderson created. He's also a World Peace Diet facilitator, called Cowspiracy, the world premiere in San Francisco, actually. I think I mentioned that, and Richard Oppenlander and myself were answering questions afterward, and it's a great movie, and one of the things I actually asked Kip if he could be on the call with us on this call, but he's got the opening, the premiere of the film in Albuquerque tonight, right now. I mean, it's happening just exactly right now. So he's tied up with that, but we can send him our good energy together. Maybe it's just bless Kip. It's a great movie, and I love to see how when people watch a film like Cowspiracy that just sort of pulls back the curtain and exposes the duplicitousness, really, in many ways, of the governmental agencies, the environmental groups, as well as the cattle industry and the other, the animal agriculture industry as well, and also actually the organic, happy meat industry, and really does a good job, I think, with humor and also just through a storyline. It's very interesting. You can't really argue with Kip's story as he unfolds. That this creates, I think, the possibility of a huge shift in people. I think books are a fantastic tool, of course, because you can really ponder the ideas, you can underline them, you can go back to them, you can share books with people. So books, I think, are fabulous, powerful way of sharing ideas, and videos also today, especially because you have the, a lot of people would rather spend an hour and watch a movie than to spend a few days reading a book. And you have the also the possibility of really having the moving images and so forth. So thank you to Kip. And I did want to mention that there is an opportunity for anyone, if you'd like to show Cowspiracy in your community, you can do that. He really asked me specifically to share this idea with World Peace Time facilitators, that he would be delighted to work with you all at any point along the way. It doesn't have to be in the next few weeks or even few months, just at any point. That this is something that you can do. You can host a screening. You can do it in a theater or, a small theater. I guess you could do it even, not just in a theater. You could do it in a community room, I'm sure, sometime. I'm not really exactly sure of the details, but I'm sure as time goes on, it'll become more clear to us. I know our good friend Grace, who's a World Peace Time facilitator, has been looking into it. She's in Charleston, South Carolina, and would like to show the Cowspiracy movie there. And she may, I'm not sure if you're on the call right now. I can't remember your phone number, but if you're on here, Grace, just feel free to at any point chime in about what you've learned. I think she said in an email to me that you need to have a certain minimum number of people that you think you can get to do sort of a major kind of screening. So anyway, we'll stay more in touch about that, and I'll try to, when I find out more, send out an email to everyone so we know more about that. So the thing that's up for me right now that I'll say a few words about is the interview that I did, let me think when it was. It was just a couple of days ago for the global, it's actually not global, it's the Summer of Peace. It's global in the sense that it's a huge internet event done by the Shift Network. They know what they're doing. They have a gigantic reach. I don't know how many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people that when they do these things, it's really big. And they get big name people like Eckhart Tolle and Archbishop Desmond Tutu and people like that, Amy Goodman and so forth. And there's about 70 or more than 70 people, and it's going on for, I think, 2 or 3 months. It started in June and goes through August. And a couple of people every, I think, Tuesday and Saturday, something like that. Anyway, I was on this past Tuesday, and I was interviewed by Philip Helmick, who is the main person. He's the one who, there's other people who do interviews, but he's the main guy who's organizing the whole thing. It's his brainchild. And I hope you have a chance to listen to it, because I wish I could have said more. It's one of those things where it's kind of a short amount of time, at least for me. It was only 45 minutes. We probably went long. He said we went 50 minutes, but or even close to 55 minutes. He said we typically only go 30 to 35, but he really wanted to go longer because there was so much material to cover that he thought was extremely interesting, it seemed, and stuff that he had never heard about before. And I think it's so interesting. This is, I think, the second or third year interviewing, 70 of the top leading world experts on peace. And he had never heard these ideas before. This was like totally new to him, the idea that our war, for example, is the very first word for war, Gavya, comes from the ancient Sanskrit word, the desire for more cows, which is really shows how we have the roots of warfare in our ownership of non-human animals through herding them, owning them as property, and killing them for food. And the sacred feminine, I mean, all these things, he had never heard any of these ideas. And I guess it showed me very succinctly how we have this gigantic blind spot in our society among the most progressive, educated, influential, spiritual, learned, revered leaders, thought leaders, spiritual leaders, writers, and so forth, who are completely oblivious to what is really the most obviously important dimension of the whole thing, of peace, namely this vast war against nature and animals that, as Gandhi said, is conducted really by our table fork. And we all participate, if we're eating animal foods, in stabbing and killing animals and forcing our brothers and sisters to do the terrible work of desensitizing themselves and electroshocking and killing the animals. And hungry people, of course, are deprived of food because it's easy for us in the wealthier countries to bid up the price of grain in the world markets to feed to our imprisoned pigs, cows, chickens, and turkeys and fishes for their flesh and dairy products and eggs while they go hungry. And hunger is obviously rampant hunger that we have today, a driving force behind war. No one can deny that. The basic injustice of the vast inequity between the rich and the poor nations is, everyone understands, it's the driving force behind conflict. The saying that everyone mouths all the time is there can be no peace without justice. And yet the most obvious injustice is animal agriculture, which not only just incredibly unjust to these poor animals and to wildlife and to ecosystems and to slaughterhouse workers and to future generations, but also to hungry people and villages, unless the vast majority of people who have really less money and who find themselves hungry. And this kind of cultural dynamic drives war, and yet, hundreds of people have been, top people have been interviewed by him to talk about world peace and how we can have peace and in our lives, in our relationships, in the world, and all this. And no one had ever talked about this before, apparently. And I could see, I mean, the people that he had on there, none of them are professed vegans, and none of them would bring the vegan message, as far as I could see. And so I guess we have our work cut out for us here, folks. But of course, there's a ray of light, the fact that he did invite me to speak, which says a lot about him. I haven't thanked him yet, but I guess I need to do that. And so the underlying idea here, I guess, is that we have a massive blind spot in the progressive movements. And we've talked about this before. I've talked about the Buddhists, the Eastern religion in general, the Unitarians, the environmentalists, the peace workers, just social justice people. I mean, whoever is more progressive, whoever is more trying to bring greater harmony and healing and kindness and justice and equity and so forth to the various institutions in our society, These are the people I think are most open to our message, and yet we still find a lot of resistance. And so I think for this call, I'd like to talk about how that plays out in our relationships, in our interactions with each other and the people in our lives, and how perhaps we can reach these people, the best ways to do that. And I think, we've talked about these principles before, but I think it's, of course, the idea that we don't get too far by just flat out blaming people, but by explaining, really, I think this is the key, to explain the programming of our society to people. That's really what I tried to do in the call. And that, I think, is very effective. I've had feedback from people saying that they have found for themselves that if I'm giving a talk, for example, they tend to go vegan, or their friends tend to go vegan because of a couple of main things. One, the idea that we're not eating meat and dairy out of our own free choice. We're doing it because we've been, in a sense, forced into it from the time we're little kids through our society's meals. This basic idea is, I think, extremely important to really practice talking about this to people, to remind people that we're all on the same side. You know, we're born into a society that desensitizes us from the time we're infants by forcing us to eat meat and dairy and look at beings as mere things, and that this, for whatever reason that we started doing it, 8 or 10,000 years ago, but it's not in our best interest today to be desensitized, to commodify life, to exclude other beings from the sphere of our kindness and compassion, to desensitize our own feelings, to repress the sacred feminine dimension, which is really it's really the foundation of a healthy family and a healthy society and healthy communities. And this is basically what these meals do. They inject into us this mentality of might makes right, and the strong dominate the weak. And yet every spiritual, religious, and cultural teaching that has any merit, really, that we feel resonates with us, is teaching the opposite of that. It's teaching us to cooperate, to help those who are less able to take care of themselves. This is the mark of not only a more more evolved society, just a mark of what we all feel in our hearts. I think unless we're very wounded and we have some kind of sadistic impulse, we feel so much better when we're in communities that are kind and caring. And so eating animal foods just militates against this at a massive level. Besides the fact, of course, that we can also bring home, I think, the health benefits of eating a plant-based diet, and also it's more important, I think, than ever to talk about how delicious vegan food is. Some people say that just the taste alone should convince most people. You can really see this happening more and more. And I just got back from Denver, where I spoke for the Veg Fest there in Denver. And it was a good event. I think they have, they definitely have several thousand people that come over a 2-day period. And I also did a couple other talks, one in Boulder, one in Colorado Springs. And we ate dinner one of the nights at a Native Foods restaurant, which is becoming it's a rapidly growing chain of vegan restaurants that specializes in vegan comfort, so-called comfort food. And if you haven't been to a Native Foods, I don't know if it's possible where you live, but I think the way it's expanding, you'll find that it's really the kind of food that everybody just loves, whether you're a meat eater, especially meat eaters, I think, pre-vegans, I think really resonate with this kind of food. I mean, I think Loving Hut is also does a great job with creating foods that are delicious, and Loving Hut has a wonderful... That's the largest chain. This Native Foods is now the second largest chain, so they're in a competition here. But But the food, really, I mean, this is the kind of place you can take anybody, and you can be guaranteed they're going to say, oh, my gosh, that was fabulous, because, you know, it has plenty of the three things that they say you shouldn't eat too much of, sugar, salt, and fat. So the food is probably not a place you'd want to eat all the time, but in terms of bridging people over, and you can get, you know, meals with less of that, but really they have these fries and burgers and really delicious food that you give you a lot of food, and very friendly and creative and just hip. And so I think, you know, this is just one indication, but we see Mark Bittman. I just put out, he just wrote an article in the New York Times, I think, yesterday, The True Cost of Meat, which, you know, he's one of the main foodies in the country, and he's promoting veganism, I think, somewhat anyway. You know, he says vegan before six, which is kind of a cop-out, but still, he's talking about how delicious, he can't tell the difference, tastes just as good, and so forth. So we have pretty much every level, people are realizing, as it's starting to happen, that you don't actually have to face any deprivation by going vegan in terms of the food, and it gets actually tastes better and better. So I think the main obstacle people feel is the social difficulties, that it's going to be hard for them when they're with other people, and then also making new food habits and changing. So it's up to us, I think, to find ways to bring this message to people. So I noticed during the week there were several conversations that came up. Besides, there were conversations about Cowspiracy and what a great movie it was, but still a lot of people haven't seen it yet. So I'm hoping that as more people see the movie, there'll be more conversation about it. You know, something like what happened with Blackfish, you know, it just changed the entire way we think about marine mammal parks. Marine parks in our society. I mean, it's having a huge impact. But I think something like Cowspiracy, if it really gets out there, and hoping that it will, can do the same kind of thing. It can change the whole conversation and view not only of environmental devastation, which is really important, because that was actually the second thing I was going to say. The two things that people say really help move them toward going vegan, or certainly, you know, reducing the amount of animal foods they're eating, are the fact, like I said, that it's not a choice that they ever made consciously. They're just acting out of a program. And people don't like to act out of a program. They like to think of themselves as being free to do what they want and what's in their best interest. And so pointing that out, it's not a criticism of them. It's just saying, you know, and say it in a way like I discovered for myself, that I was just following a program. In other words, don't say, you know, you're just following a program, because people, you know, don't like it if you point the finger and say, you're just following a program. It sounds like they're just a robot and they don't want to be a robot. But say, I discovered that I was actually just eating meat because I was following the orders that came from my family and the meat industry and the school and the religious institution I was brought up in. And so I started thinking for myself, you know, and I realized, you know, use I statements like that, and that's really helpful. The other thing that a lot of people really do find important, especially nowadays as consciousness gets more aware, is the environmental implications, just the fact of water. I mean, Northern California and many other parts of the country, there's this massive water shortage that's developing, and the obscene amount of water that it takes for dairy and meat production, for example, really, as well as global warming, it's hitting more and more, as well as rainforest destruction. I mean, all these things, and the fact that we're not going to have a planet for our kids if we keep moving in this way. This is an obligation that we have. People, I think, are more and more willing to say, well, I'm not going to just be a selfish son of a gun and just eat my steak because I like it, you know, even if it takes 5,000 gallons for a pound. More and more people, I think, are going to find that that's intolerable. So these are things, again, to use I statements and say, I realize that if I eat meat, then I'm, you know, it's just, I'm part of the problem. And to speak in these ways with anyone, you're on safe ground. I think, to talk about our own story typically. So anyway, so during the past week, we also had something come up. I was going to talk about a little bit with one of our newer Rope Pizza facilitators. Her name is Sasa, who is in the Kundalini yoga tradition, 3HO, I think it is, and Yogi Bhajan. And apparently, I really didn't know all that much about it, but apparently a lot of the yogis who are teachers and or practitioners, it's traditional to use sheepskins, sit on sheepskins. And so she sent me a link to the dialogue that they were having about this, and I was really struck by how well she expressed herself in a way where she just talked about her own being uncomfortable with having people come into her place if she's a teacher and bring sheepskins, and she's now, I guess, in a position where she can make the rules. I don't know if you're on this call, Sasa. If you're here, press star 6 so I can get you on if you'd like. If you're not, sometimes a lot of people are listening, going to listen later. But anyway, it was interesting because there was a lot of people made their comments, and she just kept talking about her own process of how, even though some of the comments were sort of discouraging the idea that she should make a big deal about it, to say, well, everybody will, they'll come to it on their own. And she felt that she wanted to make more of a statement than that. And I see you have pressed star 6. So, hi, I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. But I think it might be interesting if you'd like just to see if anybody has any feedback about this for you, or if you'd like any feedback. So your phone is unmuted. How are you doing, Sasa?
Hi, Will. Hi.
Hi.
I'm good. Thank you. Yes.
Great.
I'm a little nervous.
I know. I kind of, you're brand new here, and I'm already just calling you under the call.
That's
a little bit maybe. But I thought maybe you wouldn't mind. It's just,
don't mind.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
That's so great.
Well, thanks. Thanks for being part of our Rope Pizza facilitator training in the circle and everything else. But this is one that I have never personally dealt with at all. That's one of the reasons, I guess. I thought I'd heard everything, but I hadn't heard of that one. So that was one of the reasons I liked it, because it's this new thing. What about the Kundalini yogis who sit on sheepskins, So, but I liked how you handled it, because even though everyone was very friendly to you, and supportive, which was nice. I mean, there wasn't anybody coming on and saying, well, I think you're being elitist or something like that. But one of the women I thought was very touched. I was very touched, actually, when she said, well, I've never used a sheepskin. I don't do that. That's not something she would do. But then she said that you're just talking about it in the way you were talking about it as a real concern made her realize that she does use wool, though. And that this conversation was making her actually realize that she thought she shouldn't do that anymore. She'd rather not be using wool. And I thought this was really a great sort of a side benefit of just talking about this in the way you were talking about it. It just naturally helps people to become aware of things that they weren't aware of. And I think that was great. Is there anything you'd like to say about it, or any particular either question or concern or feeling that you have about this whole thing you'd like to share at all?
Oh, again, I'm so grateful that you were able to read that and tell me that you thought it was handled well, and that means a lot to me. And I did feel like I had to keep explaining myself again and again to a few people.
Right.
Who they're vegan, but they don't push it much,
right.
Or they don't talk about it much. And I feel that is a problem in the Kundalini yoga community. There's a little bit bigger percentage probably of vegans than in the rest of the world. But they're
right.
They don't really say a lot about it.
Right. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So, yeah, this the yoga community actually, I would think, would be is really very ripe for bringing the vegan message. And I love how the yoga community is just growing. It seems leaps and bounds, you know, all kinds of different mm-hmm. yoga traditions. So this is a place, I think, that we as vegans, wheel-piece-type facilitators and so forth have a naturally sympathetic audience. We still have a long way to go because there's so many people who are practicing yoga that are not vegan, and so many that, like you say, the vegans who are practicing are, for whatever reasons, are reticent to say much about it. So
mm-hmm.
that's the fine line that we're walking here, that you're walking, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Are you in a position where you are a teacher in the sense that you can say, okay, look, no sheepskins allowed? Is that where are you in that position?
Well, yes. Well, I have a small regular class, and
I see.
There's not a lot of Kundalini yoga in our area, so all of my students, I don't know if they've really noticed the sheepskins because I don't use one. But if you go to the bigger classes in the bigger cities, a majority of the teachers, the older teachers especially, and the younger ones, use the sheepskins. And it was recommended in my training, and I said a lot about that, and I said a lot about how the dairy was recommended too. A lot of people appreciated it. It was hard to speak up to my trainers about it, but I just did that over the last 10 months. We went one weekend a month, and so.
And how did they take it when you spoke up? Did they just, I mean, more or less you said it and they just kind of let it, you know, that everybody heard it and then they just went on.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the lead trainer was very quiet. Like, she would just kind of let me talk and,
right.
you know, not really say anything. But
right.
one of the mentors, who was also in charge, she told me not to push people too much because what they are working on in the training is helping people get to a level where, you know, they can take more. And she actually told me that she read your book and she loved the message, but she had tried to be vegan but didn't feel like she could. And so we talked about it quite a bit, and she didn't want me to tell people what I thought they should do. So that helped me make more I statements. But I did still bring it up a few times during the training about, you know, how I felt and how I feel being in the organization, because it is really large, and they have a lot of information online, and they have a lot of recipes and pictures of teachers sitting on sheepskins. And it's like what you were talking about in the beginning, where, you know, it's they want to be in the center of the spiritual revolution, but they're not really addressing the... Even the vegetarian diet, they just say, well, you know, we hope people will will come to that, but they're not really.
To vegetarian. They hope they'll come to vegetarian, not to vegan. So it,
right,
so they,
right.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. I see. Okay. Yeah, so a lot of the people, I mean, then are not even vegetarians then who are practicing.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, most
wow.
of the...
The
most
teachers
of the
are all vegetarian.
Are, yeah, yeah. Most of the well... The trainers are. I think the trainers are required to commit to that, but
right.
But they train a lot of people to teach, and we have to sign something that says we will work on that, or we agree with that ideal. But a lot of people.
Of being, a lot of being vegetarian.
Right, mm-hmm. right. But a lot of the people I know of are not even vegetarian. So I have a really mixed feelings about being in the organization and teaching this kind of yoga.
Right. Well, it's good to talk about. You know, it's that's the best thing. I think, you know, we try to find, you know, I guess there's something to be said for both. You know, that you can we can create organizations that are really vegan oriented, and everybody who's in it is vegan. And but if we don't for some reason find ourselves in that kind of organization, we find ourselves drawn to one that's not that way. We can bring the vegan message to that organization too, and hopefully help move mm-hmm. them in that direction. And I think mm-hmm. we do see progress being made. It's really interesting to me to see the dynamics going on, because I've been brought in, or I've been part of several of these different things, you know, over the years. Like the Jains, you know, are vegetarians, and they've been for thousands of years vegetarians. But there are some that actually eat meat. But very few of them are vegan, and now, of course, the whole idea is to get all the Jains to go vegan. And, you know, they really, you know, I was up late talking to these people at some of the conferences about how cows are well treated in India, and everything is different, and to be able to really, listen to them. I mean, you have to listen to them, but not change the message. I mean, because there's still cruelty involved.
Mm-hmm.
I was just asking you: is vegetarianism, like as you're taught in the in your tradition, no meat and no egg, but you can do dairy and wool and all that? Is that how it is?
That is how it is in the Kundalini,
Kundalini
yoga,
yeah.
And taught by Yogi Bhajan. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what I was saying, I'm not sure exactly what was people heard or didn't hear. I was saying that a number of yogic traditions now in the States have are vegan. You know, you can like the group mm-hmm. in Cincinnati. Did you hear me say that in Cincinnati?
No, sorry.
No. Oh gosh, I guess a lot of it cut out. Oh my gosh. Well, anyway,
yeah.
I was just saying how in Cincinnati, World Peace Yoga, there's also in New York, there's Sharon Gannon, and there's a number of other teachers also
mm-hmm.
who are explicitly vegan. And
mm-hmm.
I was saying that, you know, that's another option for people
mm-hmm.
to seek out and be part of vegan yogic communities, or failing there being one, perhaps if you feel really adventurous, you can kind of create
mm-hmm.
your own and
mm-hmm.
and go out there and have a vegan one, and you know,
mm-hmm.
and of course, there's all, you know, pluses and minuses to that. If it's a small community, it may not fly. I don't know, but anyway, there's
mm-hmm.
we're in these situations. And I remember when I was getting my PhD, I studied with a very famous at Berkeley, a very famous philosopher named Churchman, who had written many books, and he was one of the founders of the systems approach and so forth. And he said that it is impossible to be completely ethical in an unethical society.
Yeah,
you know, that basic idea. I mean, we're just stuck in a society that's basically forces us
mm-hmm.
in a variety of ways to compromise our values, and that's
mm-hmm.
just sort of how it is. So we need to do the best we can and stick
yeah.
as much as we can, I think, to speaking our truth. And that, I think, is the way you were doing it, at least the way I saw you doing it, you know, in a non-judgmental way, is the best way to bring message to people. So
mm-hmm.
I guess maybe what I'll do, if you'd like, well, is there anything else you'd like to say? Is that I could, if people are wondering, I could also maybe for next time just show that link. I feel like I'm talking all about this and nobody can see what I'm saying. So
uh-huh.
I could share
yeah.
that link, actually, if that's all right with you.
Sure. Yes, thank you. That's
yeah, if people want to see, it's kind of interesting, actually, if everyone wants to see
mm-hmm.
it. All right, well, is there anything else you want to say? I was going to go on to something else, actually, if there's anything else. But
no, thank you very much.
Great. Okay. And thanks so much for what you're doing, and we're so glad to have you with us, Sasa. Thanks.
Thank you.
Talk to you later. Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, the situation here, I think we see is that, you know, sheepskin is something that people could say, well, you know, it's not directly, maybe not directly killing the sheep. Maybe the sheep was old, and so forth, or they used the sheep, you know, in some way or other, and then the skin's left over. You know, they're just going to throw it away. So come on, you know, we can use it. Don't throw it away. So. And that's an excuse that's been used a lot for leather in general, the skins of animals. And I think it's, of course, important to remember. The research I did was quite condemning, actually, especially of the leather industry, that there's a much higher markup on leather, on animal skins, than on the meat. And without leather, the meat industry would have to raise its prices quite a bit. It would not be nearly. It wouldn't be profitable the way it's structured. So, leather is very much a part of the equation in terms of the industry making money, and it's a product just like the meat is. So I would think that the sheep skins are also the same thing. I mean, they're not just giving those away. People are buying them, and so that is a reason that the animals are being imprisoned and then killed, not just for their meat or, in the case of sheep, sometimes for their milk as well, but for their skins. And so I think it's also perhaps something that could be mentioned. I don't know how exactly the ins and outs of it, but basically, I remember Yogananda, for example, in Autobiography of a Yogi, talking about how if someone's really serious, like when he went on a pilgrimage, he didn't want to use any leather. He didn't want to use anything that created karma, that caused suffering to animals. And for a yogic tradition to be sitting on death and suffering of animals, trying to attain enlightenment or to raise consciousness or raise kundalini energy, I think does expose a contradiction that might, you know, if it's done in a loving way, to say, look, you know, this is something that not only seems to go against the ethics of what we stand for in ahimsa, which is the foundation of yoga, but also we're really causing, we're sitting on suffering, we're causing it, we're in that vibratory reality of that. And of course, the thing is, if people are drinking milk, you know, that's probably even a lot more direct. So I would say just plant the seeds as best we can. And one of the points that I never tire of making is that, and I think, Sasa, you seem to really exemplify this very well, is that we plant the seeds most skillfully when we're doing our best to embody or live the teachings. And people pick up on that very much. So I'd like to hear, also, if anyone has any comments or questions about any of this, please press *6. There's also an interesting thread in the community forum, I thought, from a woman named Leslie on neo-paganism, which I was thinking it would be interesting to talk about that for a few minutes if anyone is interested. But that's, to me, an interesting thing, because I think, you know, we've talked a lot about the Christian tradition and in general, the Buddhist tradition, the Hindu tradition, Jewish tradition, the Muslim tradition. You know, we've talked about a lot of these traditions and their relationship to animals, for food and products and so forth. And there's, you know, the older traditions, the pre-Christian and pre-Buddhist, really, and so forth, a lot of the older traditions, one would think that perhaps they have a much more enlightened or at least, less patriarchal kind of approach and more compassionate to animals. And I don't know, Leslie, are you here? I'm not sure if you are or not. I can't tell. But if you are, press *6. Otherwise, basically she was bringing up the idea that, you know, in the pagan tradition, and most of the people that are in this are, it's very much, my experience anyway, because in quite a few Unitarian groups that I've visited over the years, they have a pagan spirituality group, and very often it's a lot of women, and so they're sensitive, or men too, of course, to some, but in general, progressive spirituality is, I would say, two-thirds women. I don't know, the men are still half asleep, but anyway, I think there's a real sensitivity to the sacred feminine in paganism, especially the way neo-paganism, the earth is a mother or is a feminine principle, nature is a feminine principle, the trying to really transform our consciousness so that we're not stabbing the earth and just polluting the air and the water and killing the animals. So you would think these people must all be vegans, and yet Leslie is saying the same thing we keep hearing, which is that, you know, even among neo-pagans, there's pushback about this as well. I wonder if there's any group at all where people there's no pushback. I haven't heard of it. Okay, so here we have. I'll go ahead and unmute your phone. Area code 207. That's Maine, I think. Is that Maine?
Hi.
Hi. Is this? What's your name?
Sorry. This is Leslie.
Oh, hi, Leslie. Great.
Hi.
Okay, you're the one.
Yeah, sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing you after the call cut out. I dialed back in, and you're cutting in and out. So
Can you tell us a little bit about your experience with neo-paganism? And while you do that, I'm going to redial on the other phone that sounds better.
Okay. I've been what I call neo-pagan for about 17 years. I discovered it while I was in divinity school to become a Methodist minister like my father. And I was just having trouble with the idea that there's one God and one doctrine and everything, and I was really kind of feeling like a square peg in a round hole, and I found some goddess spirituality books, and the rest is history, and I've been studying goddess spirituality and witchcraft and paganism ever since from a lot of different teachers, and I do find it very inspiring and empowering, and there is a lot of feminism, but and I was also a vegetarian for most of that time, but about 3 years ago I went fully vegan. I had transitioned and experimented with veganism for a while, but about 3 years ago, I went totally vegan, and so as I grew in that, I started speaking about it in my pagan community, and I started to experience the pushback. So, you know, then I started reaching out for other vegan pagans, and I found some on the Internet, and I have 3 vegan friends in my own community, which is the Temple of the Feminine Divine in Bangor, Maine, and, you know, very rooted in goddess spirituality, and we all have to read the chalice and the blade, but like you were saying earlier, I think people stick to the feminism bit and don't bring the assessment wider to include non-human animals, and all the indoctrinations that you've already talked about are just still really present in neo-pagan communities too. So, you know, I think the strength in neo-paganism is that there are all these different traditions, kind of like what you were saying about yoga. There's basically hundreds of different traditions, so I'm trying to develop some vegan-pagan tradition and hope that that will spread, because I think there are a lot of people who are open to the ideas once we get them a little more pushed into the community.
Right. Okay, so that's good. So there's lots of room to create your own version of neo-paganism, basically.
Yeah,
that's
why I call it neo-paganism, because I think it's important to keep seeing it as a future-focused tradition that looks at the past but builds on current context and current ideals and everything like that.
Right. Otherwise, it's exactly. Otherwise, people think of paganism as something, you know, really old, which it is old, but it's sort of, you know, what how does it relate to us today? That kind of thing.
Totally.
So in Maine, of course, in Maine, I live there, and in Bangor especially, I can imagine there's not a huge vegan community. There's probably some though there, and Are you thinking of doing something like that, like creating your own vegan pagan community?
Oh yeah, I'm on it. I'm working on it. I already do know some vegan pagans, but there's a pretty decent vegan community in Maine. There's a big vegan meetup network all across the state, and you know, I'm a regional coordinator in my area, and we're smaller. Portland has more. It's kind
right.
of, you know, Southern Maine has more of everything.
Right, sure, I know. Yeah, oh, that's fantastic. Well, that's great. And you also mentioned something, I don't know if you can recapitulate it, but I thought it was very interesting because I noticed in a community forum you mentioned Starhawk, and Starhawk is sort of one of the main teachers, I think, really respected teachers of paganism or neo-paganism, and that she sort of dissed the vegan thing, that she sort of said, well, that's something about it, it's not practical, or I'm not sure what. Can you summarize briefly what she said? Because I think it would be interesting to hear, maybe.
Yeah, and it's very much in keeping with what I've heard from other pagans, partly because a lot of people read her stuff, but it's just also a lot of the common arguments that I heard from other vegan pagans online or so on. But I think she's become, first off, she's like invented reclaiming witchcraft, which is a very activism-based form of paganism and feminist paganism. So she's done a lot of really good stuff, and like you've said so many times, people are very enlightened thinkers and right on the cutting edge of a lot of things, but they struggle with the animal piece. And she mentioned in Earth Path, one of her slightly more recent books, which is mostly about permaculture, because she's really into permaculture and teaches a degree program in permaculture. So that's what the book is mostly about, and she had about 2 pages in the whole book, only about 2 pages, but she mentioned she had tried vegetarianism, and she'd tried it for a little while and didn't feel good, and so she didn't think it was the right diet for her, but then she just went into this really uncharacteristically defensive kind of little thing for a couple of pages where she argued against a lot of vegan arguments that she'd obviously heard, and, you know, saying, she actually said at one point that if you work with spiritual energy, then you need meat to fuel your body, and some fairly strange stuff coming from her because she's normally fairly balanced and logical. So I think it just showed all the indoctrination kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
And, let's see, what else? That, I don't know. I was going to put it on the forums later because I don't remember all
yeah.
of that quote.
Okay.
But.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, yeah, maybe when you have a chance, you know, maybe if it's not too much trouble to kind of maybe summarize a couple of the main points. But, yeah, I think I understand what you're saying, especially when you mention permaculture. Permaculture is one of the strongholds, I think, of people who feel that you need to have animals in agriculture. You know, you can't be sustainable permanent. You know, permaculture. You know, permaculture requires animal inputs. So that may be that explains a lot, I think. And you know, some of the people like Lier Keith, who you know, she's got a farm, and she emphasizes. Permaculture, raising her own animals, killing her own animals, and doing it herself, and she's, you know, one of the biggest critics of veganism now, and or even of vegetarianism, actually. But I think, so what we need really, and I see it happening more and more, is people who are writing books on and exemplifying vegan permaculture and veganic, as well as not just organic, but veganic agriculture, that we do not need to have animal inputs to have successful agriculture. That is an important dimension of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll maybe talk a little bit more about that. Is there anything else you want to say about it, or at this point?
No, I think that's the bit. I'll put the rest on the forum, and I thank you very much for including me.
Great. All right, Leslie, thanks. Hope everything's going well in Maine. I have a soft spot, as you know. I went to Colby College back in the 70s, and I always love to visit there. All right, thanks. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Take care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really a it's just something that needs to have more research done. But I really think, you know, the more people read about the history of animal agriculture and the devastation of animal agriculture has caused, you know, in my book, The World Peace Diet, there's just really that, you know, that one main chapter that goes into it, and then I allude to it in several other chapters. But the basic idea that plant agriculture from the very beginning was essentially women's work, and it's working with nature. You know, we're working with the natural, miraculous abundance of nature. You plant one seed, and then a plant comes up and gives you 100 new seeds, you know, not just one, but 100, you know, and you can eat some, you can save some, you can plant some, you can grow more, and you plant a tree, and you get all, you know, thousands and thousands of seeds, and the tree doesn't charge you per apple. The tree just gives you all the apples. There they are, you know. And so there's always been this sense, I think, of abundance, of working in harmony with nature and the cycles of nature and receiving of the abundance of the earth. And animal agriculture from the very beginning has been men's work. It's something that nature resisted, resists terribly. Nature hates it. I mean, the animals hate it. There's nothing worse you can do to an animal than to imprison her in some way. They hate that. And so this forced imprisonment, the stealing of the babies, the stealing of their lives, and the stealing of their products, and killing them in terror, and, you know, it just brings out the worst in us. And so we do now plant agriculture, and it's a culture for 10,000 years. Basically, we've been doing plant agriculture the way we do animal agriculture, in a sense, since animal agriculture defines our society. We do it in a very dominating way. Not only do we use blood meal and bone meal and fish meal and feather meal and manure and all these other animal inputs to so-called enrich the soil, but we have this basic mentality of dominating nature, of, you know, monocropping, for example. We just grow one thing, and anything else that tries to grow, we try to kill. You know, nature wants to have an abundance of many different types of species growing, and the whole communities of life, and we're stripping that away and killing everything off and using chemicals and harsh substances in order to suppress the natural systems of nature and the funguses that would naturally grow and the other plants that would naturally grow. And so instead of creating environments, and so permaculture, what we discovered, like when we were in Maine and actually in other places too, up in Canada, in Ontario, we went to a vegan permaculture place, and also up in Washington State, and we've been to a number of vegan permaculture very successful places, and we've seen it ourselves that you know, the whole idea is to create environments that are healthy for plants and for insects that are beneficial. And so it requires kind of relearning how we do agriculture. And I think it also probably, you know, imagining a vegan world, we're imagining a world where we're doing everything quite a bit differently. And instead of having vast areas like we do now where we grow one crop and kill everything else, monocropping, which is such a horrible war, and it's really the driving force not only behind GMOs, and huge amounts of pollution, but also deforestation and species extinction. And so we could allow forests to come back. We could concentrate our agriculture more around where people live. And I think as more and more people start growing their own food in their own yards and in their own communities and neighborhoods, wherever they are, on their roofs, inside the house, there's all kinds of ways you can grow large amounts of food without a lot of land, you know, and it's massive. I mean, it's something like on an acre of land, I just saw the other day, you can grow like 20,000 pounds of tomatoes or 50,000 pounds of potatoes or like 170 pounds of beef, you know. It's really so inefficient. And we feed most of the grain and so forth to the animals, create all kinds of problems. So we can reduce the amount of land by a fraction, and then we can remember and start reusing compost teas, for example, and allowing lands to lay idle and get there and build up the nitrogen again. We can start using humanure. Yeah, this great eco village in Portland, they use human, it's called humanure, and they have a special toilets people use and compost the human manure and put it back on the fields. We did that in Korea in the monastery. They've been doing that for centuries. And it's just basically when people are eating a clean diet and or eating basically an organic, vegan, plant-based, whole foods way of living, then our footprint is minuscule. I mean, it's 1/30th of the water. I mean, think of that. It's not just like 2-to-1 or 3-to-1. It's like 30-to-1. Amazingly huge difference. And the other factors like petroleum and land and pollution are up around 15 or 20 to 1. So we need to get the conversation going more and more always about vegan permaculture, veganic permaculture, and veganic agriculture. And we're doing that here. I mean, we only have our little piece of land, but I have so many zucchinis and tomatoes pouring in off the land. It's really wonderful to see. And we get food year-round out of our garden. We're in California, but I think it's, you know, we've only been here a year and a half, and we have, you know, just as one example, we have a booming garden that really makes a lot of food. We've planted 24 fruit trees, and they're starting already. I'm already getting figs and apples from them, and we're getting raspberries and blueberries, and we're getting lots of different vegetables, eggplants and cucumbers and lots of kale and all kinds. We get that all year round. So the more we just grow our own food and share with other people and get community gardens and disempower the agricultural complex that's so violent and empower ourselves. And I think really, quite honestly, that people like Starhawk and others who speak out against vegan agriculture or going vegan are doing a terrible disservice to the health of our society and to the health of our earth and to the health of everything. This is the way of the future, to free animals, let them celebrate their lives in nature the way nature intended them. I just love how, you know, we did put a fence around so the deer don't eat everything, but the deer are all over the place and they're happy and we love seeing them and the turkeys and the birds. And we found that in our yard, compared to other yards around, I mean, there's other people that have land around us, and most of them don't have the kind of vegetable garden we have. A lot of them have lawns or whatever. Our yard is just filled with birds and butterflies and bees, and I mean, all these. It's like a haven. You know, we put in a little pond, a very small little pond, and a bird bath. You know, we got water, things like that. But they love having an ecosystem where they can come and celebrate their lives, you know, and live. And so I think the way agriculture is now, it's like it creates these huge deserts, you know, where no animal wants to be, can be there. And non-vegan permaculture, you're imprisoning fishes, typically. You know, they say, oh, it works so great. You know, the fish, manure, you know, they eat this, and then they excrete that, and then you can use that and all that. But, and then you can eat the fish. And it's like, well, how do the fish feel about it? You know, they're they're reduced to being mere commodities, and you have to kill them, and it's absolutely not necessary to subject these beings to slavery and death. Let them celebrate their lives in lakes and streams, how they did for millions of years, and don't cause them to be slaves in a system that, you know, we want to be free, but we're enslaving them. It's got the seeds of its own destruction in it, and ultimately it's not sustainable, I don't think. You know, ultimately it's against our natural wisdom. So I'm looking forward to hearing more different types of solutions to this. There's really, I met a guy when I was at the farm in Tennessee who wrote a book called The Biochar Solution, which is a really interesting about how in the Amazon, I mean, this was amazingly fascinating, how in the Amazon basin, before the Hispanics ever arrived, there were huge cities of hundreds of thousands of people living there, and they were master gardeners, and they used biochar to enrich their soils and keep their soils super rich, and they could feed everyone, and they didn't hurt any animals at all. They were plant-based societies. I mean, these things have been completely lost, you know, covered up, and they were wiped out and killed and forgotten. But we don't know what happened in the earlier times. And there's this book that I've mentioned by David Nybert that I'm reading right now. Actually, just finishing up. It's called Animal Oppression and Human Violence. But it really goes, the entire book goes into kind of like taking chapter two about the history of this and expanding it into an entire book. And I'm telling you, it's, you know, from the very beginnings of animal agriculture, it was always animal agriculturists, the herders, would move into areas and they would cut down the fruit trees. They would let their cattle and sheep and goats trample the vegetable gardens, take over. It's always been the plant growers who have been dominated by and suppressed by and exploited by and enslaved by the herding cultures when they would move in. You know, the whole Genghis Khan, you know, the Mongolian invasions and other many other types of invasions that were similar were by very hard, incredibly violent, brutal men who you know, I hate to say it, you know, basically lived to eat meat and rape women and would kill and destroy the agriculture of the people who had gardens and basically created massive trauma in the history of our world, and came over here and killed off the indigenous peoples who were primarily plant-based. Did it in South America. They've done it in Africa. I mean, it's happened everywhere. And bringing it, and ranchers are always at the forefront of all the devastation of bringing disease and taking the land from the people. And it's still going on to this day. In the Amazon, the ranching industry is killing hundreds of people every year who try to protect the rainforest from the ever-expanding ranchers. And this has been going on for thousands of years, the same thing. And for Starhawk to not be aware of this and to poo-poo veganism, to me, is a real huge disservice to what she stands for, I mean, what she's supposed to stand for, really, you know, the empowerment of protection of the earth, empowerment of women. I mean, this is really too bad. But anyway, you know, that's part, you know, the problem is, of course, that since most of the people eat meat and dairy, she'll sell more books that way, unfortunately. And the most important thing, I think, for us is to move forward with our message. I'd like to, I kind of went on a long time there, but I'd like to basically, we're at just about the time where we should start wrapping up. Is there anyone else who would like to say something? I wanted to mention a couple of things just briefly. One is we have this wonderful person in our midst. I don't think he's on the call. He lives in France. His name is Stephen Goodwin. He has translated single-handedly the World Peace Diet into French. Then he translated it into German. And then he put up websites for both French and German in order to encourage people to you know, be interested in the book, but it wasn't published. So then he looked, you know, to get publishers. He got a publisher in German, and it's now coming out in German, actually. His translation will be published this, I think, in August, actually, it's coming out. So this is huge, wonderful news for Europe, I think, that the World Peace Diet is coming out in German, coming out in Italian, it's coming out in, it's already out in some other languages, but anyway, in French. He's run into some trouble with the French publishing company, some just contractual problems, and so there's a kind of a couple of threads about it. I've said I'll write a letter to the publisher, and he has said that he thinks it would be nice if some of us would write letters to the publisher too and encourage them. I'm thinking, you know, the publisher, it's a small publisher, and I guess they just don't have, apparently they don't think funds to appropriately reimburse him for all the work he did on it, and so I'm hoping we can somehow resolve this problem. But if you have any ideas, or if you can perhaps write a letter to the publisher and just say he did a great translation. I think he and I worked on the translation together for almost a year. He would send me questions on every chapter. What does this mean? What does that mean? What's exactly? And I would answer. And we did it. We really worked on it together. So. And he's a World Peace Diet facilitator. I mean, his heart is really in it. And I would love, it just seems tragic right now the way it's going. It looks like they're going to just get another translator and have him or her translated, not even use the translation that he did, which is, like, terrible, I think, after he just, it's a labor of love. So anyway, if anyone can has any thoughts on that would be great. And then also Michael Landfield from Canada as a brand new World Peace Diet facilitator. He just got his certificate, I think, a few days ago. He's a wonderful advocate and is working on creating a book and a movie. I believe it's called The Interconnectedness of Life. And he would love any feedback on what he's posting on the Internet about his book and movie. He's also put up a thing, you've seen it in the forum, about his interest to start a World Peace Diet community. World Peace Diet Educational Center, and it can be Canada. He said it can be in the United States. You know, he's willing to move or whatever. So I, you know, as you all know, I was profoundly affected by living for a short while, just really a few weeks at the farm, which at that time was a vegan community. And I think it's an enormously powerful idea and very exciting to me. So there really aren't many at all vegan communities. You know, there's one in Hawaii that I visited called Gentle World. They have a place on the Big Island and also in New Zealand. And it's a wonderful community. They've got about 30 people, I guess, and it's totally vegan. And they really are doing a lot of great work in the world through the Internet and in general in education, publishing cookbooks and a lot of other things. And, I think if anyone has any interest in this regard, talk to Michael. He's ready to go on it and would love to, just collaborate, create an educational center, a living place, a place people can live and practice veganism and help spread the message and live the message. I think our society is going to be going through a lot of major changes in the next few years, obviously, and these kinds of communities, I think, will be very valuable places to have on Earth, and if you feel drawn to be part of that, you can find out. It's on the forum. We have a thread about that too. All right, so that's it. I want to just wrap it up here. Lily, I don't know if Lily on the call. Lily, as you all know, maybe some of you don't know. Those of you who are new, has World Peace Diet Sunday. And I'm looking, I don't see, you're here. Okay, Lily, hi. I'm going to unmute your phone. Can you say a few words about World Peace Diet Sunday for everybody who's maybe, I think most people are aware of it, but there's always a few people who aren't, and I think it's a wonderful addition to the educational outreach that's going on for veganism.
Hello?
Hi, Lily.
Oh, I just got dropped, but you came back. I'm having phone difficulty, or maybe you are. I'm not really sure.
I did. I definitely had phone difficulty once. I think otherwise it's been okay.
Well,
yeah, sorry about that.
I just got dropped. I was going to try to dial back in, but you called me back. I don't know how that happened. I just wanted to just say something about, just really quickly about Starhawk, and I certainly do not want to, you know, character assassinate, but anyone who would put the word hawk in a name, their own name, what do you, I mean, hawk is a warlike symbol, you know, the hawks and the doves.
Right.
I mean, if she called herself Stardove, I don't think that she would be who, you know, she's Star Hawk, and I never expected anything but the way she is. She is the way she is. So I, you know, and I don't want to say any more because you know I'm a passionate person.
I love that about
and
you.
I don't want to say any more about this. Did you want to ask me something? Did you want me to give out the number? I would love for the person with the vegan community to call into the World Peace Diet Study Group. Are you planning to be our keynote speaker, Will, on the group?
Oh, yeah, right. Thanks for reminding me. I think this coming Sunday I am free.
Okay.
I am going to be going, I just let everybody know, I'm going to be doing a tour through New York and New Jersey in very early, the first half of August. But this next coming Sunday, I think that would be great. I could call
and
in.
Actually,
and
we're starting the chapter answering some objections, and I think that's a really good chapter. And maybe you and I can have a little talk, a little chat prior to the call. And I didn't put out what the topic was going to be. I just put that you are coming to the call. And I will give out the number for anyone. This is a great tool of activism. It is amazing the results I'm getting now with people calling me and coming to the call and saying, well, I was a vegetarian before I came to the World Peace Diet Study Group, but now I have the book and now I'm vegan. And I got a call like that today. I get calls like that all the time, all week long. Which I think is good. And the group isn't huge in terms of the regulars, but there are always people coming through. So I knew people every week, which is good. It's a tool. I created it as a tool of activism, my own activism. So, you know, this is my way out here in the country in the middle of nowhere and in the middle of an hour from the nearest town. This is the, you know, I started out with no electricity. I mean, I really...
I know you are. You're far out on the dirt road.
I'm far away, far away from everything, and the world is coming to the World Peace Diet Study Group from all over the place. Please use it as a tool of your own activism. It's a great way to introduce people to just even one or three or even nine pages of the World Peace Diet, because I'll tell you, once any part of that book gets read, people don't forget it. They don't.
Mm.
They don't. It's powerful. It stands on its own. And I have one more thing to say about the woman who said she read it, but, you know, she's not vegan. She didn't really read it. You know, if you really read the World Peace Diet, you have to be vegan. That's the way I feel about it. It's what made me a vegan almost 8 years ago. It's the only thing that made me a vegan, and I read a lot of other books prior to the World Peace Diet. If you read the World Peace Diet, you will be vegan. And if you keep reading it, you are going to be an on-fire activist. And you're not going to worry about the results of your activism. You're just going to do it because out of love, out of the love that's in your heart. This book is, every time I read it, it gets deeper into my soul. And I've read it 5 times now. I'm going to give the number of the Phone Bridge Study Group, 712-432-3900. Again, 712-432-3900, and the access code is 568-364-POUND. 568-364-POUND. It is a free call to anyone who has long-distance service or free minutes on a cell phone. And it's at 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern every Sunday. Actually, this Sunday will be the 9th month of doing this every single week.
Wow.
The 20th of October we started, and we are on chapter 12, I think 12 or 13 now. We're almost finished with the study group for this time around, and I don't know what's going to happen next.
I see. Well, great. Yeah, and if you for some reason couldn't write down the number, if you just go to our tour schedule on the internet, either at, you know, worldpeacediet.org, worldpeacediet.com, worldtuttle.com, any of our websites, just click on tour schedule, and at the very top, it's right there, the World Peace Diet Sunday, with all the phone numbers and access codes. So, all right. Well, thank you really so much for the ongoing work you're doing, and thank you all who have joined us on this call. We've really gone now, really, I think, the limit we should go. It's 10:30 on the East Coast. So I'd like to wrap it up here, if that's okay with everyone. Is that okay? Press star six if you really have an urgent, quick question or comment. Otherwise, I am going to begin the wrap-up here. So, all right. Thanks again, everyone. Thank you, Lily, and all our love to you and Jim, and thank you all our love to all of you, actually. And I know wherever you are, you're part of this Work Beside Circle, which is dedicated to compassion and justice for all living beings. And we're, I'm just delighted that we're able to meet this way, and know that we're all part of a movement that really, I think, has at its core remembering the truths that have been repressed in our society and taking a radical stand, really. I think, you know, radical in a positive sense, as I say in the World Peace Society, radix means root, you know, going to the root of the issues that we have and opening our hearts to the realities that animals are forced to experience and see the interconnectedness of all living systems and of our lives with others, and then acting on that and bearing witness in our own way to the situation. And I think doing it with joy and love is the frontier, to be able to do this in a way where we're not feeling like we're burning out and getting tired and miserable. But and that's one of the reasons I think we have the World Peace Diet Circle, is to have a community where it's a totally safe space, and also the forum too, of course, anytime. It's a safe space to share your ideas, your thoughts, your feelings, your concerns, your victories, and apparently if you think it's a defeat, whatever it is, and have people who are basically on the same wavelength, who are looking at veganism not simply from a health point of view or environmental point of view, but really from a whole systems point of view and a spiritual point of view, and realize that what we are is far greater than merely being a material thing, that what we are, what animals are, what we all are, is our expressions of an infinite loving presence. And we're here to awaken more deeply to the truth that we are and to share as best we can our insights and our love and understanding with each other. So bless you all. Thanks again for joining us. I will get this up soon so you can listen to the archive. I'll cut out the dead time there. Sorry you had to go through that. I really apologize for somehow the call got dropped. But in the big picture, it's all here, and the message goes forth. So have a beautiful month between now and August. It's easy for me to remember the next one because I looked on the calendar. August 21st is our next meeting. It's a Thursday, the third Thursday of August. It happens to be the day back in 1953 when I entered the world. So it's easy for me to remember. And I think, if it's, you know, during the month, if you have anything, if you're going along and anything comes up for you you'd like me to discuss or bring up or whatever, address, just send me an email. I think that's also a good idea. So if you, you know, any time along the way, if you have something, send me an email or call the 800 number and leave a message, and I'll put it on the list of things that we want to cover. Okay, much love to you all. Thanks again for joining us, and till next time, have a wonderful week. Thank you. Thank you.